Hello.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. A couple of items this morning. I have been talking to the CEO of Oshkosh Trucking, and he's indicated to me that he's going to take a new look at whether they will close the JLG plant in Oaks, North Dakota. They own that plant, and they had previously indicated they would close it. Since that time, Oshkosh Trucking has won a $1 billion plus award from the Pentagon to build very large trucks. It's likely the award is going to end up being larger than that. It's a very, very large contract for this company, and I commend them for the contract. They're a great company that build terrific products. At any rate, they got this new contract, and I called the CEO to ask whether, given the fact they have a lot of new business now coming from the Pentagon, whether they would reconsider closing the JLG plant in Oaks, North Dakota. He indicated that he would ask his staff to take a look at that and get back to me within a week or 10 days, but did indicate to me that he thought there's a reasonable consideration to determine whether that plant could be saved. I mean, he indicated obviously things have changed with the company. He gave me no promises, but he did agree to have a hard look at that to see whether they would be able to keep that plant open. So, I have at least have some optimism about it. My hope is that they'll be able to find a way to do that. That those are important jobs. It's an important company in the Oaks area. It does terrific work as a manufacturing plant, and my hope is that the CEO of Oshkosh Trucking will find a way to keep that plant open in the long term. Last evening, I visited with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton about the issue of using roads as dikes on the Canadian border. Last week I visited that region. I was up in Nitche and Pembina in that region looking at what the Canadians call a road. The fact is, it's a dike. The vehicle travel is prohibited on it. I actually saw the barriers that prohibit vehicles from traveling on it. So it can't possibly be called a road. It is a dike. And the problem with the dike at the border is the Canadians have put up a dike that has the practical impact of maximizing flooding in North Dakota and minimizing flooding in Canada. And I believe clearly that's a violation of the Boundary Waters Treaty. And I ask Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, to initiate contact with the Canadians. She told me last night she has initiated that contact. She didn't give me more specifics than that, but we had a discussion about the importance of it. I told her that I had been there to visit that area last week, and she indicated that work is underway in the State Department to address the concerns that I expressed in my letter to her, asking for consultations and negotiations with the Canadians. This has gone on far too long, and especially this spring when you saw photographs of massive flooding south of what the Canadians call the road, but in fact is a dike. And while massive flooding is going on in the North Dakota side, very little flooding and largely dry land on the Canadian side. That's just not fair to handle that situation that way, and I believe it violates the Boundary Waters Treaty. So I'm very pleased that at least initial contact has been made with the Canadians. I don't know the specific nature of it, but I'll get that from a report from Secretary of State Clinton, and I'm going to continue to work on this issue. It's existed too long and needs to be resolved. I'm not believing it's going to be resolved overnight, but at least we're beginning this process to try to find a solution. As you know, last week I was able to put a provision in the Interior Appropriations Bill dealing with elk hunting in the Badlands. Yesterday, the New York Times wrote an editorial about that, critical of the provision. And, the New York Times editorial seemed to suggest North Dakota hunters couldn't tell a cow from a bull. They must not have been hunting in North Dakota very often. The ability to use qualified North Dakota hunters to properly cull that elk herd under supervision of the Park Service is the right way to do this. And frankly, I think Teddy Roosevelt would smile on this result. It's a common sense result that will save the taxpayers money. Use qualified hunters as agents of the Park Service to do the job properly. We do this in the Grand Teton. It's exactly what happens in the Grand Teton National Park, and it is the right solution for the Badlands for the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. So, with all due respect to the New York Times, they're just wrong. I don't know how many of them hunt in the Badlands on a regular basis, but frankly, I think those of us in North Dakota have a much better sense of what would be a common sense solution to this problem of thinning the elk herd than the New York Times. Let me just mention one additional point. I am going to be offering an amendment today that would make it easier for our farmers to sell agricultural commodities into the country of Cuba. We've sold over $2 billion of products since I opened that market up almost 10 years ago now with an amendment. But in 2005, President Bush took action to make it much more difficult for farmers to sell in that market, and I'm going to overturn that decision with an amendment today on the appropriations bill. What the president did in 2005 was to say the Cubans had to pay for that commodity before it was shipped. Well, that's an unusual provision. People don't pay for things before they are shipped. They pay for things when title transfers, when the ship is offloaded at the dock. One person gets control of the commodity and the other person gets the funding. We require the Canadians to pay cash or to get credit through a third country bank, but what President Bush did in 2005 was take action to make it much more difficult for our farmers to sell agricultural commodities into Cuba. Today I'm taking action in the subcommittee of appropriations to fix that, and I expect I will have the votes to get that done. Well, those are a couple of the issues I wanted to mention. If you have questions, marked up as chairman of the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill, and there are very significant gains for North Dakota. Once again, $70 million for clean and safe drinking water for the regional water projects around the state. These are very important investments for our state. $5 million to advance the Wahpeton Breckenridge Flood Control Project. The money that is necessary for the Corps of Engineers on the FM Metro Flood Control Study in Fargo-Moorhead, that's $1.9 million. And money to study the James and the Cheyenne River Basins. There's a lot here that is very important, including projects at the University of North Dakota, at the Energy and Environmental Research Center, and others. So these are very important projects that will invest in North Dakota and provide significant dividends and also create a lot of jobs. Any questions?
Senator Dave Thompson, Prairie Public. I need to just go off topic for a second and ask about the idea of a second stimulus package. Where do you think that's going, and do we need a second stimulus?
I don't think we need a second stimulus package, and I don't think we ought to be talking about it at this point. I don't support a second stimulus package. 85% of the first stimulus package is not yet out in the economy. And it seems to me when that gets out, invested in projects that will create jobs, it'll be helpful to the economy. And I think that it's getting out much slower than I expected it would, but I don't think we ought to be talking about second stimulus projects. Fact is, this country's deep in debt. We did a project to try to stimulate the economy and pump some life into the economy and create jobs. But, you know, we've got to get that funding out to create jobs and get the economy moving. And then we've got to turn our attention to try to deal with this growth in federal debt. I mean, that's a very serious problem as well.
To follow up, there have been several reports that I've come across recently that that there are charges that some governors are hoarding some of that federal stimulus money to pay off debt, balance their budgets. What kind of follow-up does there need to be in Congress to make sure that the stimulus monies are being spent to propagate their purpose?
Well, the administration especially needs to follow up, and so does the Congress with respect to follow-up hearings, to understand how that funding is being used. But as I indicated to you, most of it has not yet been out in the economy. I think less than 15% has now been spent, and it needs to be spent on infrastructure and investments that will not only create an asset for the country, but also create new jobs. And while we're at the, you said off topic, let me just also tell you something else. We're working on health care reform in this Congress, and it's proven to be very, very difficult. And I want to say again, as I did last week, that I do not support taxing health care benefits as a way of finding revenue for a health care bill. Taxing health care benefits that the employees receive at their workplace, either taxing the employer that provides the benefits or taxing the health care benefits that employees receive, is, in my judgment, exactly the wrong incentive. We want people to receive health care at their workplace, and I think rather than create a disincentive for that by taxing it, we ought to provide incentives for it.
Senator, isn't that off the table already, though?
No, it's not.
I thought I heard them say on World News. In fact, I know I did on World News Tonight last night that the Democrats had basically backed off.
Yeah, well, I've been in all the meetings, and so I understand exactly the genesis of that news report. All I can tell you is that there are still people who are suggesting that we ought to be taxing health care benefits, and I don't believe we should.
To follow up, is there a plan or an idea that you have in your mind that you think would really be effective that would accommodate both sides of the aisle, so to speak?
Not yet. I mean, look, the other thing is it's counterintuitive. If you're spending far more than anybody else in the world per person on health care, in order to fix it, you have to spend another $1 trillion. That doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, look, we're trying to work through and find a solution to the health care situation that will put downward pressure on health care prices and expand coverage. But it is not very easy to do, frankly. And second, it is in many ways just counterintuitive to take a look at something that costs more than anybody else in the world pays for it by far and say in order to fix it, you have to spend a lot more money. So we've got a lot of work to do to get this right, and this is a very important part of our economy, and we need to get it right.
Senator Mike Hergert at the Red River Farm Network, you talked about your amendment on Cuba. Where do we stand? Where are you also hopeful that we'll relax some travel standards?
Yeah, well, as you know, my legislation from earlier this year is now law that relaxes the travel standards a bit. It provides for general license for travel by agricultural groups to go to Cuba to sell agricultural products. So that's now law. But I, along with Senator Mike Enzi from Wyoming, have introduced legislation that lifts all travel restrictions to Cuba, and I intend to try to advance that this year at some appropriate point on a larger bill. But there's no sense at all to continue to punish and penalize the American people by restricting their travel rights because we don't like the government of Cuba. I don't like the government of Cuba. I want the Cuban people to be free. But, you know, why should we as a public policy attempt to slap around the Castro regime in Cuba by punishing and penalizing the American people's right to travel? I don't think that makes any sense at all.
Senator, if I may, there was a report on the networks again last night about, I believe it was a GAO investigation into building security in our federal buildings. They showed a guy sleeping, one of the guards. Another fellow ran a baby in a baby carriage through an X-ray machine, and federal investigators were able to smuggle the makings of bombs into federal buildings. You've always been a watchdog on this kind of stuff. What do you make of this?
Well, I read the same report this morning. That's staggering. It's just incompetence. One of the reports I read said that in just a matter of a couple of minutes, GAO investigators were able to smuggle into a building the elements to build a small explosive device inside the building, and they were able to do it completely unimpeded. I mean, that's just staggering incompetence, and we're going to hold some hearings on that in the Congress. We need to find out what's happening and why and who's accountable. They're finally in government needs to be people accountable for these things. You know, if people aren't doing their jobs, then they ought to be removed and people should replace them that will do the jobs. But obviously security at some of these agencies is critical, and if security is that lax, there's something dreadfully wrong.
To that end, if I may, you also were a couple of weeks ago very adamant about what was going on in Iraq in terms of our military contractors, and you talked about people getting electrocuted from showers during taking a shower and stuff like that, and killed. Anything new on that front at all?
Yes, the Pentagon has actually let a new contract under what is called the LOGCAP contract, and the company that has, in my judgment, failed in so many different ways on the LOGCAP contract has not been selected for the new contract. That's Kellogg Brown and Root. And I think it suggests, I had a meeting with the number two person at the Defense Department about 2 months ago about this subject. I think it suggests finally they're paying some attention. When contractors are doing shoddy work, for example, shoddy electrical work that results in the electrocution of soldiers who are taking a shower or soldiers who are power washing a Jeep, and you discover contractors are doing shoddy work, they ought to be debarred. They ought not be given, you know, just a slap on the wrist and then a new contract. It's time to take some action to say we will not accept shoddy work. it not only injures America's soldiers and promotes greater risk for those soldiers, it hurts American taxpayers and hurts American security. So I think there's some evidence, at least in the last couple of days, that maybe the Pentagon is getting the message and they're saying, we're not going to accept the shoddy work. If we have contractors doing that, they're not going to get the next contract. I think they ought to go even further and begin to disbar some contractors. I mean, when we see evidence of fraud, as we've seen, I've held 19 hearings on this, I think we should have much more aggressive work over in the Pentagon on these issues.
When you say disbar, would that, you mean not allow them to bid on any military?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know the case, and I've spoken about it on the floor of the Senate probably five times, of the 22-year-old kid that took the shell of a corporation that his dad had, and he was the president, and he created a vice presidency, and he filled that with a friend of his who was a 26-year-old massage therapist, and the two of them, working out of an unmarked door in Miami, got $300 million in defense contracts to supply weapons and ammunition to the Afghan fighters. I mean, that's unbelievable to me. And, of course, they didn't perform, and now there's criminal indictments. But I had the three-star general in my office to say, how on earth do you give $300 million in contracts to a 22-year-old CEO with a 26-year-old massage therapist for a vice president? I mean, that's the sort of thing you ought to be profoundly embarrassed about. This is the sort of thing that rips off taxpayers and hurts our soldiers. It's unbelievable to me.
Senator, if you have time, just one more thing. The current cap-and-trade bill, the House passed. The Senate's going to be taking a look at it. How do you stand on it?
I don't like cap-and-trade. I'm willing to cap carbon because we have to do that for the country's and for the planet's security. But I'm working on a plan that I'm much more interested in something I call cap-and-dividend. Creating a new trading mechanism where you create a trillion-dollar market and have investment banks trading in derivatives of carbon securities. Pretty soon they'll have synthetic derivatives of carbon securities. It's one of the last things I want to see happen. The fact is we've seen all of these markets, the oil futures market just recently last year, many of the other markets being manipulated and filled with speculators. I don't think that we ought to create a new trillion-dollar market for carbon securities and believe that's going to solve our problem. So I'm willing to cap carbon, but I am much more interested in something like a cap and dividend approach where whatever revenues come from it go back in rough justice in dividends to anybody that is paying higher electric rates as a result of it. I mean, we can do this in a way that protects our planet, begins to decarbonize the use of fossil fuels, and still relatively holds harmless the American consumer. That's what we ought to try to do.
Not to put too fine a point on it, Congressman Pomeroy said that he opposed it because the technology for things like carbon, you know, carbon capture, carbon sequestration, is not quite there yet, and he didn't like some of the deadlines.
Well, the question of targets and timelines is critical. I said that last year on the floor of the Senate, which is why I voted against cloture. The question of targets and timelines to use the science and research to be able to come up with the way to decarbonize coal is critical. You need sufficient funding in the front end and the science and technology to unlock the mystery of how to decarbonize it, and that has to reasonably match your capability and the targets that are required in the bill. And, you know, we don't have a bill in the House yet, in the Senate yet. As soon as we have a bill, I'll take a look at what kind of targets are establishing and whether I think they can be met, what kind of funding is going to be available for the research that's necessary and the demonstration projects that are necessary to decarbonize fossil energy. But this is a very big subject, a very important subject. My own preference is that I want the energy bill to be brought to the floor first and climate change to come next. At this point, I'm not winning on that issue, but I'm continuing to push because I think it is far preferable to bring the energy bill to the floor of the Senate, have a debate and a vote on that. And a lot of good things in that energy bill that actually move towards climate change. My transmission piece, which creates a national transmission system, allowing us to maximize the production of renewable energy, you know, North Dakota wind and so on, and then move it to the load centers over a modern transmission grid. That will move us towards climate change. So I think we should put that progress in the bank first and then move to a climate change bill. But at this point, it appears that sometime in October or November, the Senate may move to a bill that is a combined bill. We'll see.
I have one more question, Senator. I read an article yesterday in TV Technology Magazine, and again, I know the horse is out of the barn on this issue. I'm just curious, are you or your office or hearing from your colleagues that there are still issues with the conversion to digital television? The article that I read in a trade publication says there are indeed.
You know, we are not hearing a lot from constituents. In fact, I was just thinking about that this morning. When the conversion occurred in June, I expected that we would have an avalanche of mail and calls and so on. We have not had that. So I think in some ways the delay from February to June was probably helpful. I think a lot more people during that period got their certificates and went out and got the converters. But I'm not suggesting there aren't problems. I think there still are some spots where people have some problems, but it has not been as much contact from constituents as I thought we would have. Any other questions? All right. Well, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you.